Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
Mayday greetings and solidarity, comrades and friends. This is Siegfried from back in the USSR on CFRU 93.3 FM. The proletarians of the world showed their strength on May 1st, 2026, on the streets of cities from Havana to Brussels to Istanbul to New Delhi to Manila to New York. In Istanbul, over 500 workers were arrested for trying to march on Gazi Park, which the government locked down for fear of a repeat of the mass protest that rattled President Erdogan's despotic neoliberal regime several years back. But such repression anywhere in the world, such repression of workers is only delaying the inevitable. While it might be hard to tell in a country like Canada with its bedroom communities and wannabe celebrities, workers are everywhere. Our masses numbering in the billions, and if united, we would soon crush all opposition. Which is why the Epstein class, the billionaires, and their bourgeois propagandists do everything in their power to divide and conquer us along cultural lines, national lines, religious lines, racial lines, you name it. They know our power, brothers and sisters. And it's time that we did too. There is a reason why Karl Marx called upon the workers of the world to unite, not just the workers of certain countries, or certain cultures, or certain racial backgrounds, or whatever, ethnicities. The international working class movement aims not only to end exploitation of workers at the hands of business owners, bosses, and landlords, but also seeks a total end to empire and the exploitation of entire nations at the hands of global capitalist cartels and militarists and colonialists. No more Iraqs, no more Afghanistans, Vietnams, Libyas, Syrias, Sudans, Gazas, Lebanons. No more war against Iran. No more settler colonialism in North America or Australia or Palestine or wherever else. No more blockades and starvation sanctions on Cuba. No more imperialism. Empire always serves the parasites, the looters, the big firms, the military-industrial complex, the perpetrators of genocide, everyone who gets fat by making others work, starve, and die on their behalf. The Donald Trumps of the world, the Netanyahus of the world, Musk, Gates, Bezos, Epstein, and all the other blood-sucking trash. No more. No more. As workers, we must know our enemy. And it isn't each other. So on that note, let's pause and listen to what Michael Parenti says about white trash and where to find it.
Well, sisters and brothers, I've decided that there's white trash in this country. But don't look among the rural poor or Appalachia to find them. The real white trash is in the corporate boardrooms, the governor's mansion, the courthouses, the national media. If you work for or ally yourselves with the high placed vipers and hypocrites and thieves and polluters and repressors and assassins, you are trash. I am sick of these so-called leaders who are leading us to the slaughter. I'm sick of their blow-dry hairdos, their sleek, beefy, money-fed smiles, their pinstripe suits, and their tight-ass struts down the corridors of power. I'm sick of the sight of them, and I hate them with all the passion of my humanity, and don't anybody tell me to feel otherwise.
And there you have it. This brings me to a central issue, brothers and sisters. Working class consciousness. Proletarians knowing they are proletarians, being proud of being proletarians and fighting for their rights, their future, their communities, their families, and the wealth of civilization that they created. Workers being workers. Working class communities with their own culture and sense of self that are capable of building bridges with other working class communities around the world and understanding what unites them with their brothers and sisters across language barriers and national borders. This is the consciousness, the way of thinking, rooted in concrete material conditions that gives rise to workers' power all around the world. That's why the ruling class goes to great lengths to get workers to see themselves, even the poorest people, as honorary members of a bourgeois club that they can supposedly gain access to via lottery, good luck, or kissing ass. Hard work doesn't cut it, though they pretend it does. Remember that the definition of success in capitalist society isn't working hard, but getting others to work hard for you. Very important to understand. The definition of success in capitalist society isn't working hard. It's getting others to work hard for you. Becoming a parasite, in other words, and leeching off other people's work like Trump and Bezos do. They don't want workers to wise up to the truth that the rich suck their blood every day and abuse them every day. And that all the wonders of civilization were made by proletarian hands. They don't want workers to ask, who built the Seven Gates of Thebes? The books are filled with names of kings. Was it kings who hauled up the craggy loads of stone? In Babylon, so many times destroyed, who raised that city up each time? In which of Lima's houses, glittering with gold, lived those who built it? On the evening the wall of China was finished, where did the masons go? Philip of Spain wept when his fleet went down. Was there no one else who wept? Frederick the Great won the 7 Years' War. Who won it with him? A victory on every page. Who cooked the victory feast? A great man every 10 years. Who paid the costs? That was Bertolt Brecht's poem, Questions from a Worker Who Reads. It was written in Germany in the 1930s. Are you going to get that kind of insight from AI? The ruling class doesn't want working people to understand history, because if they did, workers would understand who they are and understand their power as the makers of the world. Workers are God, to put it bluntly. In the context of human civilization, workers are God. No more, no less. When taken together, they are the engine of civilization, without which kings and capitalists would be powerless. Workers make everything. Parasites can only hold on to power by lulling the true God of humanity into slumber. And that slumber is always fitful. When workers do wake up, as in 1917 in Russia, the world quakes. Naturally, the capitalists and their spokespeople consider those risen workers and the leaders they empowered to be monsters. That's why they still talk trash about them over 100 years later. They still haven't gotten over 1917. They never will. For the workers of Russia and later China, Cuba, Vietnam, and other countries, they proved that God can live without fleas. God can live without fleas. It does. Working people don't need parasites to rule over them and exploit them. Workers don't need bosses. They can run things for themselves. And no matter how hard they try, the capitalists can't put that genie back in the bottle. An eagle has conceived in the rocks, and shall bear a strong devouring lion. He shall loose the knees of many. Take heed now of this, Corinthians, who dwell round fair Pyrene and the cliffs of Corinth's citadel. Historians too often obfuscate our past, brothers and sisters. Kypselos of Corinth, whose coming, that Delphic prophecy foretold in 650 BC, is a pivotal figure in ancient Greek history, who doesn't get nearly as much credit and as much love as he should, despite the fact that it was his overthrow of an aristocratic oligarchy in Corinth, which was then the chief city-state of Greece, that paved the way for democracy and the flowering of arts, culture, and intellectual pursuits that we associate with classical Greece. That flourishing was only possible because ruling class power was challenged in ancient Greece by the common people. Oligarchies were smashed and radical reforms enacted. Aristocrats, capitalists, and many classical historians today prefer a sanitized picture of ancient Greece, where these things get left out, and the flourishing of classical Greek culture, especially when compared to other ancient societies where the aristocracy maintained an absolute grip on power, is treated as a sort of mystery, to something that came out of nowhere, and we don't know how it happened. We know how it happened. Gypselos, literally chest man, if you look at the literal meaning of his name, was nearly murdered as an infant by agents of the Corinthian aristocracy. He survived because his mother hid him in a chest. Remember that on Mother's Day. He started out so small, so vulnerable, like all of us do. Kypselos grew into a titan, rousing his people to shake off oppression and move mountains. And the ripple effects of what he and the Corinthian people did in 650 BC shook Greece to its foundations and ultimately shook the world. Revolution is not a new concept, brothers and sisters. Working people have been waking up for a long time. And it will happen again. Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that was the Dropkick Murphys with Workers' Song. really important song to play on the occasion of May Day. But what I want to get to now is, well, reiterate something that I said before, which is the centrality of anti-imperialism to the workers' struggle around the world and resistance against colonialism. You know, fighting for the equality of nations in the world and of ethnicities and racialized groups and tearing down those boundaries and defeating empire. All of these are central tasks. If working class people are to emerge victorious around the world against our oppressors. Now, I've played Gabriel Rockhill's moving tribute to Professor Michael Parenti on this show before, but I want to play a tribute by Max Blumenthal of the Gray Zone, independent journalist, who expressed the centrality of emphasized the centrality of anti-imperialism in Michael's work. And just how crucial it is. And he you know, in about like 16 minutes, he breaks down the whole thing in just a exemplary way. So I want to play that for you right now. So I'm going to get into that. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
How's everybody doing? All right. It's an honor. Huge honor to be here. Didn't know Michael Parenti. I knew Christian Parenti. Known him for a long time since we were at the Nation magazine. What the hell happened to that place? We kind of came back together in the political wilderness, and here we are. And it's, yeah, feels like everything's coming full circle. I did not personally know Michael Parenti. He made a massive impact on me and my thinking and on the thinking of everyone around the Gray Zone, everyone who follows the Gray Zone, the way that we see the world. He really paved the way. Michael Parenti's, I only have like enough time to clear my throat, and I just wrote down some things, so I'll try to get through it. Michael Parenti's 1986 classic, Inventing Reality, was of course seminal for those of us who critique corporate media. Kind of introduced the concept of corporate media, and they never forgave him for it. The New York Times Review at the time said the book was, quote, easy to dismiss because Parenti painted in broad Marxist strokes, in contrast to the pointillist precision of the New York Times that sold America on Iraqi WMDs. This was a slashing study of institutions like the New York Times and its ownership, Pinch Sulzberger. And this book, Parenti noted how mainstream journalists mask their own ideological biases behind a false patina of objectivity. They own and control reality and then weaponize it to, in his words, exert a subtle, persistent influence in defining the scope of respectable political discourse, channeling public attention in directions that are essentially supportive of the existing political economic system. So the New York Times will tell you that it's simply reporting all the news that's fit to print, but when it labels any counter-hegemonic or socialist leader or political system as authoritarian, any prominent public figure who questions the official version of events from the JFK assassination to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, to the Syrian chemical attacks, to China's treatment of the Uyghurs, when it labels them as conspiracy theorists, when it refers to Hamas and Hezbollah as Islamic extremist or even terrorist organizations, and then refers to the Likud Party of Israel as conservative, as though Netanyahu is motivated primarily by anxiety over gay marriage and not the demographic growth of the indigenous Palestinian population. When it does this, it is in fact advancing a value system. And as Michael Parenti explained, this is the value system of the capitalist class. And you're not allowed to say that. You're not gonna find that naughty little five-letter word on the pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post, which is owned by the third biggest billionaire in the world, class. You're not allowed to talk about that, but it says it all. And so after Michael Parenti died on January 24th, The task of composing his obituary for the New York Times fell to someone with a bio expressing a morbid, but ultimately humble and seemingly apolitical commitment. "I write about dead people," was the bio that Tripp Gabriel provided for himself. But even with the headline of his obituary of Parenti, Gabriel perfectly embodied Parenti's harshest critique of the New York Times and the smug personalities that populated its editorial bureaus. "Michael Parenti, unapologetic Marxist theorist and author, dies at 92," read the headline. He viewed U.S. history through the lens of class struggle. But some accused him of defending brutal regimes in the Soviet Union and Serbia. Some accused him. No, you accuse him. You're accusing him of that, but then you're using the some say tactic we always see in corporate media to mask your own ideological biases, to demonize the dissident. So it was the very tactics that Michael Parenti wrote about and exposed in Inventing Reality were weaponized against him. It was the tactics that have also been used to justify the destruction of Yugoslavia, or to justify the destruction of post-Soviet Russia, in which 3 to 5 million Russians died from excess deaths as the Harvard boys moved in and economically raped Russia's economy. Did a brutal regime do that? Was a brutal regime responsible for that crime against Russia? Did a brutal regime shell the Russian parliament in 1993 so Yeltsin could rule by decree to take out the hardliners who were actually elected parliamentarians? No, a brutal regime didn't do that. A Democrat named Boris Yeltsin did that. He was a Democrat. I remember the New Yorker correspondent at the time said, you can't make an omelet unless you break some eggs. He had to do that. A Democrat like Vladimir Zelensky right now, who rules Ukraine outside of his presidential term, banning all opposition parties, banning all independent media, jailing opposition lawmakers. He's a Democrat. Only the counter-hegemonic governments are brutal regimes. So this is a really tough obituary for Michael Parenti by a guy who just simply writes about dead people. And as the Twitter historian Esha Krishnaswamy pointed out, the New York Times published a more favorable op-ed of Heinrich Himmler's daughter than it did of Michael Parenti. "Gudrun Berwitz, ever loyal daughter of Himmler, is dead at 88, read the headline. According to Tripp Gabriel of the New York Times, Michael Parenti's most unforgivable transgression was to have defended the socialist targets of the post-Cold War U.S. regime change campaigns, which continue to this day. He wrote, "His support for nominally Marxist governments led him toward positions few others on the American left would take." Ooh. "In the 1980s, he defended the Soviet Union as it crumbled and its former satellites in Eastern Europe won independence. He took the side of Serbia and its murderous leader, Slobodan Milosevic, during the wars in Yugoslavia in the 1990s, as that country fractured into independent nations." It just fractured. It just happened to break apart. Didn't feel like being together anymore. "And NATO carried out a bombing campaign against Serbia." The two have nothing to do with one another. So because dead people cannot demand corrections or write letters to the editor, I flew 3,000 miles to come here today to set the record straight that was the most important and most courageous thing that Michael Parenti did, was to defend those nations and their people against this brutal regime. While the compatible left intellectuals celebrated the collapse of the socialist bloc and cheered on the grotesque regime change wars that inevitably followed and ignored the human toll and the migration flows, Parenti remained consistent. He stuck to his guns, and he sharpened his critique of empire over time. His book, To Kill a Nation, is, as I said, probably his bravest work, as he methodically interrogated the planned destruction of Yugoslavia as the last socialist state in Europe, and the criminal NATO war that followed against the Serbian rump state, using the many deceptions that justified the whole assault to indict Western media. To Kill a Nation is a model for the kind of work that we do at the Gray Zone, published at a time before the internet, before the mass proliferation of independent media. And it provides a basis for us to understand the inexorable march of Western campaigns to subsequently destroy Iraq, destroy Libya, Syria, and now target Iran and Russia via Ukraine, which Yugoslavia made possible. Before the Western media disseminated U.S. concocted claims of Gaddafi supplying his men with Viagra to commit mass rape in Benghazi, or Assad gassing retreating rebels in Douma, Syria in April 2018, both proven hoaxes which justified NATO bombing campaigns against those countries, there were countless atrocity deceptions across the former Yugoslavia, such as the massacre of 43 supposedly innocent men in January 1999 in the Kosovar village of Rasak, which a U.S. official explicitly blamed on Yugoslav police. This became the Clinton administration's pretext for demanding total NATO occupation and authorizing a massive bombing campaign on the Serbs, despite the fact that, as Parenti outlined and exposed in To Kill a Nation, those killed in Rasak were actually fighters from the CIA-backed conglomeration of bandits, drug traffickers, mafiosi, and jihadists known as the KLA, or Kosovar Liberation Army, and had been killed after attacking Yugoslav police. Another deception. Milosevic is portrayed as murderous by the New York Times for incidents both real, imaginary, and exaggerated. But what about the KLA and the Bosnian and Croatian forces who conducted hideous atrocities against Serbs with Western support, including in and around Srebrenica? What about the US-controlled NATO forces that bombed radio television Serbia, destroyed bridges, decimated power plants, massacred refugee convoys, and which deployed depleted uranium, cluster bombs, and napalm against a largely defenseless civilian population? Are they not murderous, too? Today, Donald Trump is portrayed by the Democrats and much of our media as a demented madman for not only bombing bridges and power stations in Iran, but also his threat to destroy an entire civilization, his threat to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age. So too is his Secretary of War and DUI hire, Pete Hegseth, who's vowed death and destruction raining down from the skies all day long on the people of Iran. And they are sadistic, sociopathic figures, to be sure. In an age of cartoon villains, there's some of them, they stand out. But who said this? You know, no real prizes for who can guess, but I bet you some of you can. I was suggesting that we blow up all the bridges on the Drina. I was suggesting that we take out his oil supplies. That was Joe Biden on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee referring to NATO assaults on Serbia, who said this: the aim of the war on Yugoslavia is to demolish, destroy, devastate, degrade, and ultimately eliminate the essential infrastructure of the country. That was Wesley Clark, the NATO commander, as quoted by Michael Parenti. So Donald Trump, if we understand what Michael Parenti was getting at and read his work, we understand that Donald Trump is not just some maniacal, irrational aberration against an otherwise sober-minded leadership which favors negotiation to civilian slaughter and mass destruction. He is the most honest face of the capitalist, and I would add militant Zionist class that he serves. And he and those around him know exactly what they're doing. They are the embodiment of what Parenti called rational fascism. And they also know that they enjoy total impunity when they do it. That's why none of the US military or political officials who ordered the killing of thousands of civilians and billions of dollars in property damage in Yugoslavia, ever faced any legal accountability for their crimes? As Parenti pointed out, the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was set up by Madeleine Albright with U.S. funding in total violation of the UN Charter, with no precedent in international law and no mandate from the World Court. It was essentially a U.S. court in The Hague. And it was a product of the same so-called U.S.-led rules-based order, which has protected the perpetrators of the Gaza genocide. It's a system in which the U.S. makes the rules and everyone must follow their orders. And so a courtroom drama was contrived as a political extension of NATO's war, and it took on the form of the prosecution of Slobodan Milosevic. But here's something else that Trip Gabriel of the New York Times won't tell you. In 2016, 10 years after being subjected to an international trial and being denied heart surgery leading to his death in a high-security prison inside The Hague, which prevented him from publicly confronting the NATO powers that had bombarded and destroyed his country, Slobodan Milosevic was exonerated by the International Tribunal, which found that he was not responsible for war crimes committed during the 1992 to 1995 Bosnian War. They won't tell you that. Michael Parenti got it right. You won't know that from his corporate media obituary, that Michael Parenti got it right again. Michael Parenti was right. Michael Parenti was right because he was consistent, because he stuck to his guns, because he painted in straight lines. He never veered from an anti-imperialist analysis when so many other left intellectuals did. He was right because he did not seek elite respectability. And so you would never find him on some shadowy financier's jet. He would be right down here with the people in Berkeley. He spoke for the working class from which he came. He was right. He was righteous. Michael Parenti is a guiding light in the darkness of this blood-stained golden age. Michael Parenti, presente.
From there he came, a brave young Christian brother. Side by side in foreign night in Spain. A Tommy Woods at 17 died in Cordova. With the Vienna here to hold a gun. From Dublin to the Via del Reno, where he fought and died beneath the Spanish sun. Viva la Quinta Regada. No pass around the pledge to pay them a tribute. At the night is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight. Many Irish heard the call of Franco. Joined Hitler and Mussolini too. Propaganda from the Portland newspaper. At the lucky two enlisted blue shirt crew. And the word came from the church support the Nazis. And the men of Clough failed again. But the bishops blessed the blue shirts in delirium. And the sail beneath the swastika to Spain. Viva la Quinta Regada. No pass around to bless the dead and fight. Adamante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight. This song is a tribute to Frank Ryan. That's Conway and Jimmy Cody too. A Peter Daly, Charlie Reagan and Hugh Bonner. Though many died in that but never few. Tommy Doyle, the Lippert and Charlie Donnelly. Lee Tomlinson and Jim Stanley from the ball. Jack Nelty, Tommy Patton and Frank Conroy. Jim Foley, Tony Fox and Dick O'Neill. Viva la Quinta Regada. No pass around the pledge that made him fight. Adamante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight. Viva la Quinta Regada. Let us all remember that
you're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I'm Siegfried, and that was Christy Moore with Viva la Quinta Brigada, Long Live the 15th Brigade. A song about the international brigades that working class people that went to fight in Spain against the Nazis in the 1930s in the Spanish Civil War. Heroic volunteers who did that. Right? Fighting, standing alongside the Spanish people. Coming from all around the world and engaging in that heroic act of solidarity. And of course, before that, we had Max Blumenthal's moving tribute to Michael Parenti and how he emphasized the anti-imperialism as an aspect of working class struggle in the world. I want to turn back to, in what time we have left here, I want to turn back to something Michael Parenti wrote. It's in a section of his book, Contrary Notions, The Michael Parenti Reader. And it's a section entitled My Strange Values, and really talks about, like, you know, who he is and how he came to be the person that he was, and like fighting for the rights of workers, rights of oppressed people, standing up against the power structure and the ruling class, and really choosing. Right, choosing where he would stand in his life and who he would fight for. And so I'll quote him. I never wanted to live a life that was dedicated only to my self-advantage. If this makes me a do-gooder, I can only ask, why is do-gooder a pejorative term in the mouths of some? There are only two alternatives to doing good. A, doing evil, usually by serving the commands of others who do evil, and B, doing nothing, living only for oneself in a narrowly atomized, hustling way, which also makes life easier for those who do evil. During the Vietnam War, many of us were torn up about the death and destruction being delivered upon Indochina by U.S. forces. On one occasion, I saw a slideshow of how U.S. planes and helicopters had sprayed tons of Agent Orange, across the Vietnamese countryside. How a rich soil and fecund foliage were turned into a toxic moonscape. In this show, there were no mangled bodies or burned villages, just ecocide, a bleached poison hardpan, where once there had been living nature. It left me with a knot in my stomach and a weight on my heart. It was one of the most wrenching anti-war presentations I had ever seen. Those who feel perfectly free to use Agent Orange in order to win a war are the same ones who, in times of peace, believe they have a right to what remains of the Earth's natural resources to use as they wish, transforming living nature into commodities and commodities into dead capital. We hear the reactionaries dilate about all the fine values for which they stand. Endlessly they go on about personal values, family values, religious values, patriotic values, old-fashioned values of honesty and clean living. Yet their ranks are plagued with illicit sexual scandals, unlawful scams, untrammeled mendacity, massive corruption, and corporate grand thefts. They plunder the public treasure while posing as holier-than-thou patriots. Unfortunately, many beleaguered working folks, who need to believe that something in their world is right and trustworthy, give uncritical allegiance to these misleaders. Opportunistic, hypocritical value mongers are no more honest and virtuous than anyone else. In many instances, they are far worse than the worst of us. They perpetuate monumental deceptions and crimes that most of us would never even imagine. They tirelessly tarnish their critics for being self-indulgent liberals and libertines who lack upstanding values. But the truth is, if you are a progressive person, rather than devoting yourself to plunder and privilege, you have values for peace and justice, for fair play and environmental sustainability, for communal caring and power sharing. Everyone has values, but ours are much better than theirs. Not only because our values stand for far, far better things, but also because we really try to live by them as much as we can. I think I'll end the program there. Brothers and sisters, I will express my solidarity once again on May Day 2026. I'm going to see you all next week. And just keep up the good fight. Keep standing strong. Remember your power as working class people. Remember who you are. And remember that we will win. Solidarity. I'll see you next time.
Souls if we're under. bumping the generator song till the cops said move around.